Welcome to another edition of Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious. This is me, Robin Kerner, the original Blue Republican, and I am really excited about this show. I know radio hosts always say that, don't they? But I'm especially excited because, in a way, this was a little unexpected. I received a message through the Blue Republican Facebook page, and if you're not on it, you should be, from the gentleman that I will be speaking with today. His name is Dan Childs, and he lives up there in Michigan. And the first thing I tell you about him, if you know me well and you know my show well and you know what Blue Republican is all about, will be enough to indicate why I'm excited about this. He is a classical liberal. I mean, labels are bad, right? But he's a classical liberal with a small L, interning with a Democrat, progressive, capital L liberal to get the job done in Flint, Michigan. What job am I talking about? To undo the social and economic devastation that has, most of us would say, has been wrought by bad leftist, statist politics and welfarism. And many of us are interested in finding treatments not just for the symptoms of some of the socioeconomic malaise in many of our communities, but for the cause. Now, this gentleman, Dan Childs, isn't just talking about it. And I kind of plead guilty. I'm a writer. Here I am on the radio. I do an awful lot of talking. But, you know, I have to bow when somebody walks down the street who's in there doing. Dan Childs is in there doing. And what he's doing has so many elements of what we as pro-free market folks who want to see liberty with love, which is a big slogan for Blue Republican. It's what I think. Love is the only thing that really makes liberty worth having, right? It's no good being dogmatic libertarians and standing on high horses. Sometimes you have to get your hands dirty. And the work that Dan Child's doing, well, it actually literally involves, I imagine, getting hands dirty, doesn't it, Dan?
It does.
Okay, Dan, I would like to, and I want to just say to all the listeners, the message that Dan wrote me on Facebook was absolutely fantastic, how he explained what he's doing. And I told him just before the top of the show, you know, if all I do is let you monologue and you hit all the points in that message, we're going to have a great show. So I'm going to shut up, I think, is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to invite Dan to first of all, briefly, tell us how he got to believe what he believes politically and decide to devote a good portion of his life to what he's now doing. And, of course, we will talk about what he's now doing thereafter. Go ahead, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Robin. I guess I'll first start out with how I came about to the classical liberal, philosophy. I don't want to say ideology, because I'm not ideological, so philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the military for 3 years. I was stationed out at Fort Lewis out there in Washington. And I left active duty in 2003. And in 2004, the unit I had left got sent to Iraq. And I lost quite a few friends in the Battle of Mosul and throughout the time that they were over there. So it affected me tremendously. And to get a handle on what I was dealing with, I really threw myself into educating myself on philosophy, the nature of our society, why we were over there to begin with, and it brought me around to the understanding that the way to build society and community is not through political authority. It's through mutual aid and reciprocity. And that's essentially the goal of my internship, is to, start working on getting this out.
Getting this out?
Yes, getting the idea, giving an example for other, either classical liberals or libertarians or anyone. I mean, this can be done by anyone. So,
And you're up there in Flint, Michigan, right?
I actually live in Traverse City,
okay,
Michigan, which I'm originally from the area of Flint. Actually, Grand Blanc is the city I grew up in, but it's a suburb of Flint.
Okay. So let's tell the listeners, what is the project? that you are involved in, that you and the representative with whom you are working, Representative Phelps, Democrat, what is the project that you are working together on?
We're running a crowdfunding campaign to raise money for an urban farm in Flint. Well, Beecher is the actual community. As of last Wednesday, there is no grocery store at all in Beecher. The Kroger that was there closed down on August 18th or August 16th, and then the IGA that is right down the road from the farm closed the 27th of August. So as of right now, this farm is the only source for fresh produce. And so
this is an urban farm.
Yes, it is an urban farm.
Right.
They have right now they have 3 hoop houses, and they grow a lot of different varieties of food, and they sell to a lot of restaurants in the area. But they are not, as of right now, sustainable. They're helped out by the Ruth Mott Foundation, which is in Flint. They gave them a 5-year grant to essentially make themselves sustainable. And so that's what Representative Phelps and I are doing. We're trying to raise money to help them become sustainable, essentially.
Tell us a little bit about the community that this is operating in.
Like I said, it's about 13,000 people. It's a very hurt economically community.
Right.
I mean, it's been devastated. The Flint and Genesee County area was actually in recession before the rest of the country even knew there was a problem. So since the 80s, really, since GM pulled out, I mean, it's just been a downward spiral. And I hope to try to help it in some way, help make it better.
Now, talk to us a little bit about mutualism as opposed to welfareism and why this is something that you're passionate about. And this speaks, obviously, to the fact that libertarians, we often say, here's what the problem is, we've got to undo the problem. But you said, you know, sometimes if you take that to a poor community, you know, come with us, come and be libertarian, vote against the help that you're getting from the state. As you said to me earlier, it's like asking someone to quit their job before they've got another one lined up. Now, why would they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not a rational decision. And if we believe people are inherently rational, we have to understand that they're not going to support that decision.
Well, I would just say, actually, Dan, just to be clear, I don't think you have to believe that people are inherently rational to believe that they're not stupid.
Yeah,
because,
absolutely.
You know, and I think behavioral economics, we're not rational, but we're not going to knowingly hurt ourselves. And sometimes it's almost as if libertarians are asking people who aren't where we are to hurt themselves.
Yeah, that's, to me, I believe that's exactly what they do. And it's not that I hold that against them. It's just I see a better way for them to get their message across. And that's what I'm going to try to build.
So are members of the community that have been affected by what is quite awful poverty, are they increasingly being involved in both making the food as well as obviously having access to it once it's been produced?
Absolutely. They have Jackie and Dora King who run the Harvesting Earth educational farm. They have anywhere from 30 to 35 youth that they work with, that they come to the farm and Jackie and Dora teach them the healthy life choices. And also part of their organization, they're both masters of karate, so they also teach the children martial arts and self-discipline through martial arts. So they're a very good organization and they're amazing people.
Now, we've got only a minute left in this segment, but I'm interested also to find out how it came about that you were able to get a progressive Democrat politician to support this. Because there's obviously a great story here about kind of common ground.
Yeah, absolutely. I've known Representative Phelps for quite a while. He was elected last year, and when he was elected, I went to him to just talk to him about crowdfunding. I actually read an article in Governing Magazine about municipalities using crowdfunding as a means to build civic projects in their community where there's just not tax funds available to do it, or, you know, for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And I brought that idea to him, and he liked it so much, he offered me an internship to essentially do that, create a civic crowdfunding campaign in his district.
Okay, this is fantastic. We're going into the break. We're going to come back and talk some more about that soon.
Sure.
Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious. I'm talking to Dan, and Dan's just telling us about how he came to be working with a Democratic representative. He is a classical liberal, more with a libertarian bent, to actually do something that wasn't a statist solution to social and economic problems in his community, but was in many ways a very libertarian civic solution. Back to you, Dan. Carry on, please.
As I was saying, Representative Feltz offered me an internship, and I accepted, and I got started right away researching the issues in his community, and there are so many to choose from, but I decided to try to help alleviate the problems with access to food, because this community...
It's a food desert, right? It's a food desert.
Absolutely.
Which is super... Go ahead, yeah.
82% of Genesee County, of which Beecher and Flint are involved or included, live in a food desert. I mean, it's outrageous.
And what's the definition of a food desert?
I believe it's a square mile,
mm-hmm.
Where there's limited to no access to fresh produce.
Wow.
And there, like I said, it's 82%, and Through the research is how I came to meet Jackie and Dora King and get involved with the Harvesting Earth Educational Farm.
Now, when you brought this idea to Representative Feltz, was there at any point an ideological discussion, or did it not even come up because it was so clear that you were bringing a solution to a problem that any good American would rather see solved than remain as it is?
Yeah, there really was not any... conflict of ideology, because as I told you earlier, I believe we all want the same things.
Mm.
We just go about them in a different way. And this through this project, we're going to be able to come to the same ends just through a little bit different means. So, but it's still something that he can support, and that's why he gave me this opportunity.
Have you spoken to him, and no reason why you should have done it, but have you spoken to him with respect to... how this sits alongside other work that he might support. Like, I mean, he's obviously supporting kind of more statist solutions to social and economic problems in his community. Does he see this as something that the state couldn't do? Or is that he's, I mean, how would he, I mean, I know he's not here on this interview, but you must have had these conversations with him.
We have. I don't want to put words in his mouth or anything, but... he recognizes that this project is replicable in any community, essentially, in the nation. And once we're done with this one and it's successful, I plan on doing more. Because, I mean, this has really been one of the most rewarding experiences of my life, trying to help this community help themselves, essentially.
And to be absolutely clear, the reason why this is so exciting, why this is truly an example of mutualism... and it's a civic solution, is because you're using technology in the form of crowdfunding that we didn't have even, I mean, not a decade ago, this certainly could not have been done, right?
Correct.
So you were able to collect money from interested individuals in small and large amounts, at low cost, immediately, controllably, and deploy
from all
that.
Over.
Yeah.
It's an amazing technology.
And
freest market.
Yeah. Yeah, really. And it's an especially free market, isn't it? I mean, it's a kind of freedom that the free market's never had before because, you know, now, like, you know, I've done this with, I have a project, WatchingAmerica.com, and it's a volunteer project. It's kind of it's an idealistic project. Every now and then, obviously, we have hard expenses, and then I invite people to give what they think it's worth. So it's so free. We're not even saying you have to give this particular amount for this product, right? It's like, you know, if this inspires you, then give us some of your, give us some monetary value. And that's what we're able to do now. And you're obviously finding that you're able to do it on a scale that can change lives in some, perhaps even close to save lives.
Yes, absolutely.
Because the way that you present it using the internet, et cetera, is so compelling. Because there are a bunch of Americans of all political stripes who, I mean, why would they not want to do this? And why are we as libertarians not all over this?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I believe in philosophy. I mean, and it's very important to, in dialogue, to try to come to an understanding through philosophy. But actions are what change lives. And we really, as libertarians and classic liberals, or and even progressive Democrats, we need to recognize the problems that are in our community and work together to solve them, because arguing back and forth is not, it's not going to do anything.
Have you thought ahead to, I mean, almost like a kind of in a fantasy, how it is that you could use, let's assume that you're successful, and I guess this means that there is, there's affordable, high-quality organic food for people who before just couldn't even get what we would call decent nutrition within striking distance because they don't have transport. I mean, you know, we're talking about the poorest of the poor here. Let's say you're successful. Have you thought about how you would talk about that in the future? If you were to, let's say you were to run for office or to be supporting a candidate, the power of an argument that says, don't take it from me, don't take the theory. Let me just explain what we did.
Yeah.
Have you kind of played that out in your mind?
I have, not to a great extent, because I've been so busy creating this campaign that, and I'm also about ready to have a daughter, so that's
congratulations.
It's a lot of stuff going on right now, but I have thought about what I want to do after this is successful, and I plan on, depending on how successful this is, I plan on parlaying this into essentially a political consulting to do this kind of thing in representatives, communities all over the country.
Now, why do you call that political consulting? If you were to replicate this, in what sense would the consulting be political? Wouldn't it really be you're consulting on a kind of project to bring food into community, you know, et cetera, right? So would it really be political consulting?
Well, I'm not actually going to limit it to just urban farms. I'm going to branch out into, because there are many problems that I believe can be solved, or at least alleviated to a great extent through crowdfunding.
Okay.
And I guess the way I would call it political crowdfunding is because I'm going to be approaching representatives about problems in their district and how I believe I can solve them or at least alleviate them through crowdfunding.
And obviously what's going to be compelling to the representatives is you're going to be able to say, we did this here.
Yes, absolutely.
And would you make the case that you've actually been able to, would you make the case that this achieves something that the government cannot in principle achieve?
Yeah, I do. I would make the case. The entire project and campaign is built around mutual aid and reciprocity rather than the government model, which is based on political authority. I mean, that only makes a cohesive community so much. And with ideological differences between people politically, I mean, there's not much that it gets done when, I believe, when the government gets involved, so.
In the last three quarters of a minute of this segment, do you know much about who it has been, who's been supporting you, financially or otherwise, where they are politically or what their involvement is in the community?
A lot of my friends, I'm very actually different from most of my friends. They're more Democrat-leaning, and I do have some Republican conservative friends, but I've had quite a bit of support from my family, and Representative Phelps also, he's been really helpful in helping me
But it's been
the
crowdfunding, right? It's been the online crowdfunding that's made this possible.
Yeah.
Which means money from multiple sources.
Yeah, we just actually went live this morning, so yeah, it's still pretty new.
Okay, we're going into the break. We'll talk more when we come back.
All right.
Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio. So, Dan, tell me, this crowdsourcing has now gone live, recently gone live. What exactly are you going to be spending the money on that you raise in this fashion?
Okay. There is a building that is across the street from their urban farm.
From the urban farm where you will be producing this food?
Correct, yeah.
Yes.
The money that we raise will go to purchase the building and renovate it, and it will serve as the as a nonprofit organic market and one of the biggest food deserts in the country.
And you will be selling, presumably you will be selling to cover costs?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so now the $64,000 question is, how do you grow high-quality organic food in interesting quantities in the middle of one of the poorest suburbs of the United States?
It's a system called aquaponics. It essentially combines aquaculture, which is the raising of fish, farm raising of fish, and hydroponics, which is the growing of plants in a soilless medium. Combining these two makes the system closed loop. So essentially how it works is the fish wastewater gets pumped from the fish tank to the growing beds. The growing beds then clean the water, suck up all the nutrients from the fish waste, and then the water goes back into the fish tank, and it's just recycled. It's a closed-loop system. It grows approximately 6 times more food per square foot than traditional agriculture. It uses 90% less water than traditional agriculture. And also, since all the water is contained, there's no threat of agricultural runoff to the local water supply.
Incredible. So what would be the running cost of this system?
I couldn't give you numbers, but the system that we are getting, it's being donated from Kettering University. They're
now
located in Flint.
Do you know approximately what the value of that system is?
The system that they will be donating, according to Dr. Sanders at Kettering, is going to be approximately $30,000 to $35,000.
Okay, which would itself be raisable. I mean, if you were able to put out a crowdfunding project and say, okay, you know, we are going to save a community of 13,000 of our poorest fellow Americans from food poverty, and we can do it. We can do it with a setup cost, let's say, of $35,000. Let's say.
Yeah.
I mean, when you consider what the government would spend to try and do the same thing, right? With all of the other consequences that come with, I don't know, the mailing of welfare checks and, which of course don't help if you don't have the food that these people can buy with their welfare. I mean, there's so many ways this is so great.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Originally, I planned on raising money to purchase them an aquaponic system, but through building the campaign, I was introduced to Dr. Sanders at Kettering, and Jackie has been working with him, and we got them to donate a system, and really they're just waiting on a market to sell all their produce to set up the system and get going.
Now, when you say working on the campaign, up until this point, what did campaigning for this entail, and to what extent was it important to be an intern for a Democratic representative?
Well, the internship gave me essentially credibility to approach various organizations in the community down there. And really, right now that we've gone live is when I'm going to be hitting the pavement starting tomorrow.
Okay.
Because one of the big things that I'm trying to do to make sure we raise enough money is get all manner of associations involved, because I'm very passionate about mutual aid organizations and mutual aid societies.
Mm.
And I would like them to donate. What I'm offering them is a $500, if they donate $500 to the campaign, I will create essentially a plaque with their organization's logo and name and where they're located at. And then around that plaque, they'll get 5 individual nameplates for 5 members of their organization. So what I'm planning on doing, I want this entire building to be covered with associations and individuals.
Right.
So everyone that comes there will see what crowdfunding and what getting involved and just stop the political arguing and just do something, what that can do for a community. So.
And are you getting, what responses are you getting, if any, from the people who stand to benefit the most from this? Do they presumably know what's going on?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Jackie and Dora, I've talked with them a lot about it, and they're very, very excited. So they're going to be able to expand their farm, the reach of their farm, so large because of how much these systems produce. That they're just chomping at the bit for
now,
this to get going.
So they already they already have a kind of an urban farm, but you're going to set up a separate 501c3 or something? Like how's this going to work?
What they have 3 hoop houses right now where they grow all their produce. Once the system is donated,
not using aquaponics so far.
No, this is traditional.
Right. Okay.
Agriculture.
Yeah. Okay.
And once Kettering is done with the proof of concepts. And they donate the system. One of the hoop houses is going to serve as the aquaponics, to house the aquaponics system.
Okay. And their organizations are private companies? Or, like, what's the current status of their organization? Those
Dora
who are already doing... Yes.
They're in 501c3.
Oh, okay. So this is already a non-profit. So there's already a pre-established non-profit.
Correct.
And this will be done under their auspices.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so there's no other incorporation of any entity that's required here?
Nope, not at all.
Okay, so the first thing you did, we're kind of jumping around, but you must initially have gone to them with this idea before approaching the representative, Phelps?
No, I actually approached Representative Phelps with that article that I explained earlier. And once he offered me the internship is when I started to research the problems, and that's how I came across Jackie and Dora and their organization.
Oh, okay. So was it just by sheer luck that they were there, that there was already an organization that was that well poised to do this? Because obviously the interesting thing, the reason to be excited about it, is that it can be replicated.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So now there's going to be, most poor urban, suburban communities don't already have that going on.
Correct.
So
yeah,
how do we...
Yeah. And lucky for me, yes. I don't want to say their organization or anything lucky about their organization, because they're very hardworking. There's nothing, no luck.
No, I just mean it's lucky for the community that you can, that there's already such a big piece of this project kind of in place.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a you know, it kind of just fell in my lap that they okay. happened to be in Representative Phelps' district. And once I found them, I knew they were the people that I wanted to work with because they are hardworking, and the right. way they mentor these children is just amazing. They're amazing people.
Okay. Okay. I love it. So now I'm sure that email that you wrote me, or that Facebook message you wrote me some time ago, you know, it was full of so many good points, and I can't believe we've touched all of them. You did mention an article that was written by Jeffrey Tucker against libertarian brutalism, in which he argued for a humanitarian libertarianism rather than a brutalist one. And I don't know if you know, but about a week later, I wrote an article about that was entitled, I think it was maybe it was a week before, a week later. It was around the same time. Libertarian purists, libertarian about everything except liberty. And this idea that there's one way to do it. And so I saw Jeffrey's article, and then obviously there was mine, and I called Jeffrey and I said, we have to discuss this because I think we're writing about the same thing. And for my money, the two best interviews I've ever done on Blue Republican Radio are the two I did with Jeffrey, with Jeffrey Tucker about exactly this issue. I kind of summarize it with this, as I mentioned earlier in the show, it's about liberty with love. You know, it's about really putting people first rather than being right first. And whatever kind of version or dogma that you have that you call libertarianism, it's more important to do good than be right, because you know what? We're all imperfect. So let's get off our high horses. Now, you kind of spoke a little bit to that in that message that you originally sent me about this, Dan.
Yeah, I did.
Go ahead.
Jeffrey Tucker, that man, his passion for everything he does is just infectious. I love watching his videos. He's an amazing guy. But essentially what I'm looking to do and why I came to you, because of your connections with the Liberty Movement, is libertarians, we really, or classic liberals, we need to start building associations. That is the essence of classical liberalism, is associations, building associations to mitigate the need of the state to begin with. And I don't believe classic liberals and libertarians are doing enough in that respect.
We've got to do more of walking the talk.
Yes, absolutely. We have to get out in our communities and show them that we don't want them dying in the street. We just see a better way to run our society. And if we don't have examples to point to, they're not going to come to us. It's just not going to happen.
Would you say this is one of our... Do you think the Liberty Movement as a political movement is worse at this than other political movements in our country? I mean, even than those who strongly identify Democrat or strongly identify Republican? I mean, for example, certainly I can easily think of the religious right wing of the Republican Party. I mean, whatever you may feel about that, you can point to their walking the talk. You know, they're trying to cause a political change, but there are all of these things they're doing in society to say, this is what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I do believe classic liberals and libertarians are sorely lacking in this. We are great in philosophy and pointing out the problems, but the solution aspects were a little bit lax, and I believe. So that's what I'm trying to set up, to give an example to other people that are like-minded, to show them what can be done if you just put down the ideology and start solving problems.
And also, you know, swallow a little bit of pride. I mean, I don't know many libertarians that would approach Democrat Republican. That's Freudian right there. And just, again, to find the common ground on those issues, those areas where we can advance towards liberty in a fashion that anybody and everyone will support. Because then they can see it, and once they like it, then you can say, aha, you like that? Well, let me tell you why it works. Right? They don't want to know, right? You know, it's not like we have to force it down their throat, because they can... they can see the results. And I'm also reminded, there's an old Chinese proverb, the person saying it can't be done should not interrupt the person doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love that you are. come on, Dan. Tell me what else you had in that message. You know, that we haven't covered yet, because we've just got a few minutes left, and I want you to share everything with the listeners before we close out here that you shared with me.
One of the aspects of this campaign is, like I said, is about associations.
Mm-hmm.
And in that article, or in that message I sent you, I spoke about Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America,
mm-hmm.
where he basically went around the country and just documenting American society, how we function, what we do with our time, and one of the things that he found so amazing was that wherever in England you find a man of rank, and wherever in France you find the government creating a project, in America you will find associations.
Yes.
And I really believe that this history needs to be brought up more to people to show them what America, I believe, is supposed to be about, which is mutual aid.
That's right, because you know a lot of the problems that I think we have as classical liberals, as people who want to reduce the state, it's the problem of lack of imagination. If you have, like certainly you and I, grown up in a culture where you have never seen any entity other than the state solve broad-based socioeconomic problems, you cannot imagine, because you've never seen it, you can't even piece it together, what the alternatives are. So because they have faded into history. Yeah, I mean, there was a very rich mutual society, and even back actually in the 19th century in England, there were mutual societies. There's a great book by Tom Palmer, After the Welfare State. There's a wonderful chapter on this. There's a rich history of mutualism and civic engagement. We know it can be done because it's been done, but we don't know that it has been done because nobody's reading those books, nobody knows that history. So what we need to do is kind of create the new history of mutualism and civic engagement. We have to go and do these projects so we can point to them in the now, so that people have the components to imagine a better non-statist way that's more efficient, more honed to the needs of individuals, to localities. Because, of course, the other problem with centralized statist welfareism is it's very clumsy. It takes no account of the niceties of a community, of how people got into the problems that they're suffering from, that they're dealing with. Your local action, where you can see and meet and relate and talk to the people who you're trying to help, means that you can do a much better job.
Yeah, absolutely. Crowdfunding, to me, in comparison to traditional philanthropy or even state model, before crowdfunding came along, you kind of just, if you were a small donor, you would donate and just kind of hope for the best that the money was going to be used to do something. And same with taxes. You just hope that your taxes are used for good. Well, crowdfunding allows people to use their money to hone in directly on individuals and communities without having to go through the bureaucracy of the state or philanthropic.
I love it. It's a classical liberal dream.
Yeah, it is. It's an amazing thing.
Another hour that went very fast here on Blue Republican Radio. You know, if any of my listeners are over there in Michigan and you think this is cool, as I do, I just want you to know, Blue Republican does not have a chapter in Michigan. Blue Republican Michigan needs to be set up, and I can't think of a better way to engage and manifest the values of Blue Republican, the kind of values that Dan has been talking about today, than getting involved in a project like this. And I think, and what a fantastic way, out of pure self-interest, to market the Blue Republican brand, but to support an actual effort in the community that's going to do good for people. Liberty with love. Liberty that makes a difference. It isn't just some theoretical grandstanding. Dan, we have a minute and a half or so. Please, tell the listeners, especially those in Michigan or not, how they might be able to support you, what they need to do, where they can go.
Sure. Our crowdfunding campaign is up on Indiegogo. Do a search for Harvesting Earth Organic Markets, and you will find it. I'll also post it on the Blue Republican website or Facebook page, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And there's 5 or 6, I believe, levels of donations, and ranging from $1 all the way up to $1,000. So one of the perks that I'm really going to be pushing is the Buy a Brick Challenge. We're essentially selling bricks of this building.
And okay.
If you donate $100, you'll get your name put permanently affixed to this building. So anybody that comes to this market will see your name and where you're from, and they'll see everyone that's donated that much. And I just want this building to be covered with names from all over the world and country. So.
I love it. This is absolutely fantastic. And you have no other website. It's just that Indiegogo.
We also have a Facebook page set up for the Indiegogo campaign also that I can post on the Blue Republican Facebook page.
Okay, does it have a name that you can give out? The page?
The Facebook page is, all of it's going to be under Harvesting Earth Organic Market. That's basically the project name.
Harvesting Earth Organic Market, changing the lives of thousands of people in one of the poorest parts of Michigan, United States. Thanks for coming on to the show, Dan. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me. Thank you.